Economic Hardship Reporting Project and The Intercept called Insecurity, launching a new episode each day looking at pandemic poverty. And Alyssa Court, Executive Director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, author of Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America. Her forthcoming book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. A very happy belated birthday to Narmi Maria. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Thank you, Amy. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook at 90.1 FM.
And W297BM Stony Brook on 107.3 FM.
That's correct. And it's currently 6 o'clock, which means it's now time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
Over on the other side of the room.
Indeed. Way.
I'm sorry, I had to turn you down for a second because I had to yell at the device.
Which is pretty much a euphemism for how things have been.
Yelling at devices.
Cutting people off and yelling at devices.
Yeah.
That's how we solve problems, right?
That is indeed how we try to solve problems anyway. We're right in the thick of it, that we're in that period between Christmas and New Year's. Always a very cheerful week.
Everyone is getting supplies. Noisemakers and...
Are they? Really? Oh, boy.
And yeah. Writing down their resolution. Maybe they have multiple resolutions for the new year.
I'm not taking part in that. Not this time. That's my resolution.
Well, you have to acknowledge it's 3 instead of 2022. Because that will change.
For the first month, I'm going to still be writing 2022.
That always happens.
That always happens. Although there's less places where you write down the date these days, because it's usually done for you. But boy, what a storm. What a storm that we did not get here.
Horrible.
It got cold. Yeah, all right, it was cold. It's winter.
Are you kidding? The number of deaths has doubled from what they initially reported.
My point is, we didn't get the storm right here, where I am sitting. We did not get the storm.
And we can't even conceive of how bad it is.
I can conceive of it, but, I'm not saying I want death and destruction around me. I'm saying I just want some snow, some white on the ground. Is that so much to ask? And the thing is, everyone's using this to their advantage. My Amazon story, right? Supposed to get a package on the 24th. Now, I'm not one of these people that demands that the Amazon employees work during holidays and meet my demands and all that kind of thing. But when you say something is going to arrive on a certain day, kind of expect it to arrive. And I was watching it. You can do the tracking now. I saw it left their facility in New Jersey, and it was on its way to Long Island. And then they said that weather has impacted them. Except for the fact that in that part of New Jersey, and here on Long Island, there was no weather. I mean, the weather was upstate. That's where the weather was. They weren't shipping my package upstate, so that was an invalid excuse. Give me another excuse. Give me one that actually applies. But don't tell me it's weather when I live in the area and I know that there was no weather that could prevent you from moving a package from New Jersey over the river to New York. That is where it has stayed ever since. They said, you'll get it on the 26th. If you don't get it on the 26th, you can get a refund. The 26th came, and you know what happened? The only thing that changed was that notice. They said, it's going to come on the 28th. If you don't get that by the 28th, you can get a refund. That's all they did. They didn't do anything else. So my package has been missing for the last several days for reasons that are very, very unclear. I just, right before the show, this is exciting news, I just got a notice that it's going to be arriving tonight somewhere. which is kind of weird because the place where it's arriving to is closed. So I don't know what's going to happen next. But, this whole monitoring things online business that we all do these days, it can be fun, but it can be exasperating, too, because you're talking to computers, and they're giving you excuses that make no sense, and you can't ask anybody to explain it because there are no people involved at almost any stage in the process, except for the poor guy that's got to deliver the thing. And he's the one that gets all the abuse in the end. Not from me. I'm always nice to the people if I ever see them. But boy, that's been frustrating. You expect something on Saturday. Here it is Tuesday. I still have no idea where it is.
It's not even the holiday as a reason that you would like it expedited. You weren't expecting
it. That's a good reason. Give me that reason. Say, you know what? Our employees want some time to themselves. It's a holiday. Just postpone your expectations a little bit and stop being such a jerk. If they had said that to me, okay, I would have accepted it. I would have accepted that. But no, they say it's weather-related when there's weather hundreds of miles away where my package is not. I'm sorry. I just cannot accept that.
Was it a private carrier?
I don't know what it was. I know nothing about who is transporting my package. And I feel I should at least have the person's name, you know, and maybe where they're from.
Well, sometimes those things go far away and then come back.
Why do they do that?
It's Express.
It was
something.
So close.
Was it Express?
I could have.
You don't know where.
I could have gone to New Jersey and gotten it myself.
It could be on a spoke. It could be on part of a hub, or.
Anyway, it's been. I don't care. I don't really care about the package. You know what? They can lose it. They can break it. Don't care. It's just a package. There's more important things in life. And I'm trying to think of something more important right now. Well, you know, it's the end of the year, and guess what's happening? Dispensaries are starting to open in New York. Finally, this is happening in New York City on Thursday, I believe. And tell me if this is wrong. 4:20 p.m. They're going to be opening the first dispensary in New York City. That's going to be a wild house. So it's finally here. And now that it's here, it's going to be growing. They're going to be opening all over the place. It took long enough. And what's happened as a result of it taking so long is that all these unlicensed places are now selling marijuana, which I don't normally have a problem with, except for the fact that they answer to nobody and there's no guarantee of the quality and all that kind of thing. So having an official dispensary is obviously a better solution. I guess, you know, they want to do it right. So, okay, fine. We took an extra year or something to get there. But as of this Thursday, things are going to start changing.
The quality aspect is so crucial, too, for people that do consume and rely on a steady, consistent supply and don't want their money wasted. When you have all sorts of quality issues, you end up not having as healthy an experience just in every single way. And, you know, the rampant free market that sort of filled the gap, it's great and it's carefree and all that, but it also, like, it can kind of get to a saturation point where it just is causing way more harm and, I guess a lack of confidence in getting stuff that's tested, stuff that's actually going to help insofar as, like, tax base for wherever, you know, the funding initiatives are. The way the legal scheme was designed and intended. So gear up. I hope it's much more successful and that there are options for people, because that's really what's been missing is options, variety. That's when these places open in states that have recreational and strong medical use markets, there are different flavors and farms and a whole wide array of things in your locality that open up, and you don't get that in these, like, gray markets that it's just like a label slapped on, you know, some auto crop, like, commercial just filler, you know, or a lot of, like, CBD products filled in. So that's like, it has no real THC or any other benefit. Just it's more headache than it's worth.
Yeah, if you get marijuana at a bodega, I think you're asking for trouble, because there's no accountability. There is nothing official about it. And while it's true that was always the case when buying marijuana in the past, because it wasn't legal, it's legal now, so we should have some higher standards. And I understand the impatience. I know why, you know, all these places have popped up, and in many cases they've done some good. But we're finally at the stage where it's going to be run the way it should be run. And what I mean by that is New York really seems to be doing it right. For instance, this first dispensary opening on Thursday, it's run by Housing Works Cannabis Company. They're one of the first recreational cannabis dispensaries who got a license in the state of New York. And what they're having is a, what they call a soft opening. I'm not really sure how it's a soft opening if they've told everybody about it. It's probably going to be a massive amount of people lined up outside. It's downtown in the Village area, and it's operated by Housing Works, which is an iconic nonprofit dedicated to relentless advocacy and life-saving services for tens of thousands of New Yorkers in need. Yeah, that's not exactly your big corporation here. The store manager, yes, they have a store manager now, says this is a once-in-a-lifetime moment. That said, our nonprofit's mission remains as urgent as ever. We are eager to take the lead as a social equity market, model for America's cannabis industry, specifically with our hiring practices and continued support of individuals and communities disproportionately impacted by the unjust war on drugs. That's the kind of people I want to see at the forefront of this. So I'm really looking forward to that being the model for all that follows.
Yeah, the places that are getting business, that are establishing like the kind of expectations and the protocols that the state has in place, like what that looks like for a community. And it's going to serve all kinds of people, and I think that's something that will surprise people as well, that this is something that is, it's not a niche or like any one walk of life that you can say is in need or looking for this kind of product. So it's exciting for them to be creating jobs and getting this kind of thing off the ground. So
they say all proceeds from sales will be directed to their parent organization, Housing Works, Inc. They were founded in 1990 to address the dual crises of HIV/AIDS and homelessness. The self-sustaining nonprofit provides job opportunities, legal advocacy, and comprehensive housing and health services, funded in part by revenues from its thrift stores, Soho Bookstore, and now it's cannabis dispensary. So, good start. Good start, New York. It's not the only start either. Out east, the Shinnecock Nation has approved adult cannabis rules. They could begin selling adult recreational marijuana as soon as this week. Yes, it could be happening right now. After tribal approval of regulations to govern cultivation, sale, and consumer use of products on the Southampton Reservation, the tribe's Council of Trustees voted unanimously on Thursday to approve the new rules in a move that Tila Troge, a member of the tribe's Cannabis Regulatory Division, called a historic moment for our economic future. The new rules paved the way for the first government-sanctioned retail sales of cannabis on Long Island, leaders of the sovereign tribe said. Tribal Trustee Chairman Brian Polite told Newsday, the tribe worked hard to make sure the rules were thorough and rigorous while helping fund a new source of revenue for the nation. Regulations include requirements for lab testing and age restrictions. This wasn't a race to be first, he said. We wanted to get this right. The newly amended regulations would govern individuals' ability to grow and use cannabis on the Southampton Reservation and how Shinnecock smoke shops will sell to the general public. They cover cultivation, processing of marijuana and cannabis products by tribal members, and for fully licensed sale at retail. The tribe's wholly owned Little Beach Harvest Cannabis Dispensary under construction on tribal land will also be governed by the rules, and that dispensary is expected to open next year. It's a very proud moment for the Shinnecock Nation, said Shinai Bullock, managing director of Little Beach Harvest. The tribe's regulations are expected to largely mirror state rules on cannabis sales, including restrictions on purchases by those under 21, and require lab testing of cannabis that must be cultivated in New York. Tribal members who operate formerly licensed operations will be able to sell approved cannabis to tribal shop owners, but only shops on Montauk Highway will offer products for sale direct to the public. We're interested in the health, safety, and welfare of all consumers, they say. All product will be extremely safe, laboratory-tested cannabis. Shop owners who operate stores on Montauk Highway will be eligible to apply for licenses now, meaning the first licenses could be approved as soon as this week. They move fast. Lance Gums, a former tribal chairman, owner of the Shinnecock Indian Outpost and shop Cloud 9, said the ability to sell cannabis from his shop represents a potentially lucrative transition after tobacco-based products have waned because of state rules. We lost a lot when the state intervened and started charging wholesalers taxes for branded cigarettes, said Gums, whose family has owned the shop for generations, was among the first to sell cigarettes all the way back in 1958. But now, by literally growing our own cannabis and owning the locations, we'll be able to make a decent living. Yeah. Shinnecock is a historically underserved and marginalized community, said David Talby Silva, who manages the Shinnecock Smoke Shop. This is one of the first real steps toward economic self-sufficiency. He said, we're on equal footing, and it feels like the scales are balanced. Cannabis license holders will pay a 4% tax to the tribal government under the new regulations to help fund much-needed services of tribal government, including health care, substance use services. They say it's not just shop owners who will benefit economically, though. We hope that this will not only allow our nation to expand social programs, but also allow individual tribal entrepreneurs to get into the industry. And New York State has indicated it would not intercede in tribal sales. This is completely separate. Native Americans living on federally recognized sovereign tribal land can choose to operate dispensaries that are not regulated under the New York State cannabis law, which has been done in other states that have legalized cannabis, said the state's Office of Cannabis Management. So that, to me, that's huge. Not regulated by New York State, regulated by the nation themselves.
Yeah, they might have different offerings, different ways of presenting the product, down to how it's grown, or I don't know. That's intriguing, the way that's laid out, and again how it looks for their nation, for their part of the world. It's so crucial, and I think it also places the consumption of cannabis around substance abuse and things that affect that community in a sort of in a official way, like recognizing that it is going on, and this is how we talk about it. This is how we understand it, and it gives it context going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
There's already, medical, use, so many benefits, and it seems counterintuitive when you talk about alcoholism and the opioid crisis, all of the other sort of vice out there, but creating a way of talking about using this substance and benefiting from it as a community, I think is... making that distinction is really important, and a part of this that we're only just beginning to understand.
What I see here with these stories is just a change in the mindset, where instead of being reactionary to the idea of this, people are really signing on to doing something that makes sense, in a social way, being fair. Being professional, and I really hope people see that. Unfortunately, here on Long Island, so many towns have opted out of being able to have dispensaries. Fortunately, Brookhaven, the town that Stony Brook is in, is not one of them.
Such a shame, because agriculturally speaking, this area is so skilled and proud, and the wider state indeed as well knows so much about growing, and to see it sort of relegated or shunned in a way is just seems like a missed opportunity. But okay, go on. Yeah, it's It's sad. Yeah, Brookhaven is sort of alone for now.
Southampton, Brookhaven, and Riverhead. I think, is that it?
Just those three.
On Long Island?
On the island.
Yeah, Smithtown opted out, and some villages are opting out as well. It doesn't matter, because what's going to happen is the dispensaries will be very successful in the places that are having them, and the other towns will see that, and they will choose to opt in at some point.
When they hear about traffic issues and, you know, like migrations of people coming on the weekends to these various places.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, word will spread.
Well, you know, not only that, but also just the lack of problems. Because, you know, I don't know what people think is going to happen if a dispensary opens on Main Street. You don't seem that concerned when three bars open on Main Street. And I'll tell you, what goes on in bars, and bars are great, I'm in favor of bars, you know, no real issues there. But what happens there is much more of a problem than what happens when somebody goes to a dispensary to buy some cannabis. If you go into these, we've been to several. We've been to dispensaries in Canada, in Massachusetts, in Washington State, in Illinois. Leaving anything out?
Amsterdam.
No, it's not the same thing. I mean, yeah, it's you know, they turn a blind eye to it, but it's not legal.
You've still been.
Yeah, but it's not the same thing. It's not. I mean, that's a coffee shop. This is a huge.
That's true.
Room where all these people will tell you, okay, this is the effect that this particular strain will have. They'll answer your questions. They know the product, and the customers are really interesting too, because you know they've been researching this for years, and now finally they can talk about it.
That is a distinction. There are shapes and sizes to all of the dispensaries you've seen in North America, specifically. Some are very large and have a certain flow to them. Some are smaller in more remote places. But they all have specialists and are not dual purpose, like a restaurant or a cafe, the same way you might imagine in Europe. They're strictly about this business, and they know their stuff. You meet budtenders.
Imagine this.
Learn new language.
Have you ever been to a cheese shop, you know, where they basically know everything about the cheese, and they'll answer your questions about it? It's kind of like that, without the pretentiousness. or a wine tasting or something like that. Yeah, it's of that level. It really is. So the fear that people have about dispensaries appearing in your neighborhood, it's a good thing for your neighborhood, trust me. It is. Every single dispensary that we have gone to has been a positive experience, and the people behind the counter have been very pleasant, and the customers have been quite intelligent as well. As Kyle said, we went to some big ones, but also I remember the tiny one we went to when we went out onto the western coast of Washington State.
The peninsula, yeah.
We stopped at one place where there was just the guy behind the counter and you, and me, of course. It was very tiny, but, you know, he seemed like the kind of guy that would be basically behind a bar, and, you know, big guy with a beard and all that. But he knew the stuff as well, and it was really cool. And I remember there was a list of rules, of things you can't do because of federal regulations. You know, you can't use a credit card, and you can't mail marijuana. You can't carry it over certain borders and things like that, even between two states where it's legal in both states. It's really silly. And I hope the federal government gets its act together and just legalizes it already and gets it done so that we don't have to keep jumping through hoops. It's really, really kind of silly.
Yeah, and it starts with the states and these programs gaining some momentum and gaining experience that time, you know, running it and seeing what works.
Yeah.
And
for those people who are concerned, go to a dispensary. Just go and ask some questions. Get a brochure. Learn something. And just you know, take in the mood as to what it's like inside. I think you'll be surprised. I'm speaking especially to elected people who are making the rules and who are saying things publicly. Learn of what you speak first. Go to some of these places. And you won't have to travel out of state to do it very soon. So,
and ask for the biggest, most gigantic, stickiest buds they have.
Well, that's assuming they want to buy something, but you know, you can go in there and you know, get some edibles or something like that, you know. One thing I don't get, and this is a whole other issue. The whole edible, like candy-like thing, they have to stop making it look like regular candy. That's just wrong. And I think a lot of people in the community agree with that.
It's unwelcome cheekiness.
What was the brand we saw that is exactly the same name as another brand?
There's this one that is looks like a Hawaiian Punch.
Hawaiian Punch.
Yeah.
It's got the same font. It basically looks like it's something Hawaiian Punch makes. It's not, but they use that name. And how do they get away with that? That, you know, that kind of thing, I don't get. I don't get the business model behind that. Who are you trying to appeal to?
Well,
it's you know, you have to appeal on your own merits, not try and hitch your wagon onto something else, and definitely not try and be something that any kid is going to be at all interested in.
I think specifically that imagery should not be on stuff that is a gum, like a candy or anything, like an edible.
Mm-hmm.
On a flower material, I think, yeah, maybe it works, especially if maybe that particular strain is named in a way that is referential to that brand, which is rare. Usually they're more abstract names, but using the fruit juice or other like candy brands is, first of all, just asking for, you know, a lawsuit from the brand.
It's stupid. It's the dumbest thing I could imagine.
To make something edible that could be a sweet of mm-hmm. sorts, also look enticing with that very similar or almost identical packaging, is just trouble all the way around.
I almost wonder if the people behind this are actually working against the cannabis industry, because what they are doing is so potentially harmful.
Well, that's that gray market.
Such an easy thing for opponents to latch onto and say, aha, see?
Yes.
And it's not like, you know, you can't sell the product on its own merits, because this is what people want, but you have to have some kind of control over, you know, who it appeals to. It's really not that hard. Anyway, so I think this is an example of how we are taking a critical look at what is happening and moving forward in a positive way. So, Okay, another story on a completely different spectrum, or a completely different side of the spectrum, and that's, we mentioned this last week when it was a tiny story. Well, actually, it just broke in the New York Times, so it stopped being a tiny story. It started becoming a major story, and it's become even more of a major story since then. And, of course, I am talking about Representative-elect George Santos from here on Long Island, who the New York Post, for some reason, he talked to the New York Post, and right away, you gotta suspect something when you only speak to arch conservative media outlets about the lies that you're accused of. You have to wonder why. But they're not having it either. Their headline reads, "Liar Rep. Elect George Santos admits fabricating key details of his bio." I'm just gonna read a little bit of this story here, just so you get a sense as to where it stands right now. Long Island Rep-elect George Santos came clean to the Post on Monday, admitting that he lied on the campaign trail about his education and work experience, but insisting that the controversy won't deter him from serving out his 2-year term in Congress. Now, keep that statement that I just read on hold in the back of your mind, that he admitted that he lied on the campaign trail. We'll get back to that. Here's a quote. "I am not a criminal," Santos said at one point during his exclusive interview. "This controversy will not deter me from having good legislative success. I will be effective. I will be good. I'll behave, I promise."
Shouldn't he have said, "I'm not a crook"?
He's getting there. Santos's professional biography was called into question earlier this month after the New York Times reported that he misrepresented a number of claims, including where he attended college, his alleged employment history with high-profile Wall Street firms. You know, I got to say, this is something that is a lot harder to scrutinize. He claims to be gay, and he was married for 5 years to a woman up until 2020. Again, he certainly could be gay, but with all of this, it's definitely possible that he's latching onto that as well for some kind of political advantage. Because one of the first things that he said in response was not, yes, I lied. It was instead that the New York Times was out to get him because they're intimidated by Hispanic gay conservatives, which is a bizarre statement to make. But I wouldn't put it past him to just make all of that up as well.
So he's like the product of like a whole bunch of focus groups or something, essentially? Like he just lied about everything that might get him some points to get elected?
What gets me is how long it took for all of us to find this out. Why wasn't he vetted a lot sooner? Why wasn't this taken seriously?
This is how asleep Long Island was.
He won the election. A lot of people say it's Long Island. Even if they knew this, they probably would have voted for him. And you know what? You're probably right. Because Long Island right now is in such a horrible shape, worse than I've ever seen it politically, socially. Just the hatred and lies that get... I mean, the fact that he lied so much is almost seen as a good thing politically where we are right now. Because the truth doesn't matter anymore. You just make up your own facts.
Well, I like to think it's getting better. Maybe people have been thinking about it over the holidays, but...
I think they doubled down during the holidays.
Yeah, maybe that's more like what's happening. You know what? Read the room, as it were. You know, figure out which way the wind's blowing. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's changed too much. I'm not seeing anything. Well, yeah, everybody's gone. So
let me get back to this.
Yeah,
the liar story. Santos's professional biography was called into question earlier this month after the New York Times reported that he misrepresented a number of claims, including where he attended college, his alleged employment history with high-profile Wall Street firms. You know, one of the questions being raised here is that he gave his campaign something close to $1 million. And it turns out that he didn't actually have these connections with these high-profile Wall Street firms. Where did that money come from, is the question a lot of people are asking. How did he get all this money if he didn't have those connections that he was claiming he had? Santos said on Monday, "My sins here are embellishing my resume. I'm sorry." Even though you said, "I'm sorry," that does not sound like an apology to me. "My sins here are embellishing my resume." Kind of sounds like you're mocking the accusations.
It sounds like he's misdirecting to something bigger, like what you said about where the money's from. You know, that saying this is all I've done is my resume is just a little bit inflated. Kind of makes you say, oh, okay, well, he's fessed up. That's it. Case closed.
Now, I'm gonna say two things to you, Kyle. All right?
Sure.
And just give me your honest reaction to each one.
Let me have it. Yeah, yeah.
I've known you to embellish a bit.
Maybe.
It's not the worst thing I could possibly say to you, right? It's like, yeah. Maybe you'll even say, you know what? Yeah, I have embellished a couple of things in my life.
Well, now that I think about it.
Yeah, now that you think about it. Now I'm gonna say.
You pointed that out.
Kyle, I've known you to lie.
About what?
Yeah, you see, right away, you take offense.
Who?
Because
who said
I
it?
Just called you a liar.
What'd they say?
Because embellishing is not considered the same as lying. Embellishing is something we all do. Yeah, we exaggerate a little bit. Lying is bad. I'm sorry.
It's way bad.
Sorry, I kind of missed a Mackie in me all of a sudden. Lying is bad and should not be tolerated. And needs to be corrected.
What if it's a good lie?
Now, let's go back to that statement I asked people to hold in the back of their heads. And thank you for continuing to hold that. The New York Post said that he admitted that he lied on the campaign trail. I haven't heard him use that word. I haven't read him using that word. I've seen him say things like, I am not a criminal. My crime is that I embellished. I have not seen any quote where he said, yes, I lied. I don't think he is admitting to lying. Even though all the newspapers are saying that he's admitting to lying, did he actually say that? Did he actually use the word lie?
Oh, I see. So you're saying these are like hedges, but he doesn't. There are things that can be quoted where he, if ever looked at again, wouldn't be. You wouldn't be able to say he's admitting to lying.
Look, call him right now. We have his home number. Call him right now, and ask him, Representative Alex Santos, are you a liar? Did you lie? And he will. How did legal get in here? We can't do that right now? Wow.
All right. We'll extend the invitation. He can guess.
No, I just threw the window. All of a sudden, there's a guy in a suit with, okay, fine. I guess we can't call him live on the air. But can we call him after we get off the air? As long as you don't know about it. Well, the fact that I'm asking you on the air now probably, you know, a lot of this we should talk about later. Let's continue with the story. No, it's useless. Santos confessed he had never worked directly for Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, chalking that fib up to a poor choice of words. Okay, again, when you lie, it's not about the poor choice of words. It's about the fact that you lied. It's about the fact that you said something that was not true. You know, I guess, you know, by definition, saying something that's not true is a poor choice of words because you're using the exact wrong words, opposite to what actually happened. But that's not the way you say it, you know? Okay, let's say I'm on trial for murder, all right, and the judge is asking me to plead for my case. Should I go to jail or should he let me go? And I just say, yeah, I killed the guy. It was a poor choice of physical action on my part. It was a poor choice of where I put my hands, like, around their throat. Yeah, I embellished physically, I guess. I'm guilty of embellishing my emotions. You know, there's certain things you just don't say. You can't say it like that. No, I'm sorry. Poor choice of words. This guy is not admitting to lying. The 34-year-old now claims instead that a company called Linkbridge, where he worked as a vice president, did business with both of the financial giants. So the company did business with the giants, not him. I will be clearer about that. It was stated poorly. Let's know how the Post says it. I will be clearer about that. It was stated poorly, Santos said of the lie. Every time the word lie is used, it's the reporter saying lie. It's not Santos saying lie. He doesn't get it. At Lawbridge, Santos said he helped make capital introductions between clients and investors, and Goldman Sachs and Citigroup were LPS, limited partnerships, that his company dealt with. He also admitted that he never graduated from any college, despite previously claiming to have received a degree from Baruch in 2010. They were quick to say, he never did that. I didn't graduate from any institution of higher learning. I'm embarrassed and sorry for having embellished my resume. Again, embellished. I own up to that. We do stupid things in life.
In life, in this campaign that you just lied through. What are you talking about in life? That's like, oh, gee, I messed up when I spilled some juice in the, you know, daycare, something or other. You know, no.
It's about to get worse.
Yeah, keep going.
It's about to get much worse. Santos was elected to Congress on November 8th to represent the Long Island and Queens-based 3rd District. He was also accused of lying about his family history, saying on his campaign website that his mother was Jewish and his grandparents escaped the Nazis during World War II. Santos now says that he's clearly Catholic, but claimed his grandmother told stories about being Jewish and later converting to Catholicism. I never claimed to be Jewish, Santos said. I am Catholic because I learned my maternal family had a Jewish background. I said I was Jewish. Ish. Jew space ish. Not Jewish. How could you get that wrong? How could you misunderstand me? Never said I was Jewish. I was Jewish. Oh, my God.
It's not a thing.
I want to smack the guy now. Seriously, this is wrong.
Nobody says that.
So offensive on so many levels now.
It's super offensive.
It just gets worse and worse. Santos, the first openly gay, non-incumbent Republican elected to the House, also faced accusations that he lied about his sexual orientation, with the Daily Beast reporting last week that he was previously married to a woman until shortly before he launched his unsuccessful 2020 campaign against Democrat Tom Suozzi, who ran against Kathy Hochul this year and gave up his seat. I won't say anything about that. The soon-to-be lawmaker confirmed to the Post on Monday that he was indeed married to a woman for about 5 years, from 2012 until his divorce in 2017, but insisted that he is now a happily married gay man. All right, well, you know, I don't know what else I can say about this. I dated women in the past. I married a woman. It's personal stuff, Santos said, adding that the relationship got a little toxic. I wonder why it got toxic. You know, if you lie as much in real life as you do on the campaign trail, I can't imagine anyone wanting to stick around.
Yeah, I wonder what she knew.
I'm very much gay, he says now. I'm very much
very
gay.
Very much gay.
I don't know. Just don't think I've ever seen that statement before. I'm very much gay, he says now. I'm okay with my sexuality. People change. I'm one of those people who change. Yeah, you change everything you say because you lie. That's why you're being held up to scrutiny like this. So you think the story's over. No, the story's not over. Santos also acknowledged being a deadbeat tenant in Sunnyside, Queens, where the Times reported he was ordered by a judge to pay more than $12,000 to a former landlord who claimed non-payment of several months of rent, as well as that Santos had tried to pass a check that bounced. On Monday, Santos claimed that at the time of the lawsuit, his family was deep in medical debt from his mother's cancer battle. We were engulfed in debt. We had issues paying rent at the time. It's a vulnerability of being human. I am not embarrassed by it. That's pushing back here. Okay. Santos said his mother died of cancer on December 23rd, 2016, after living with him at the Queen's apartment, and acknowledged the judgment against him. Asked if he ever actually paid the arrears, Santos said, "We didn't pay it off. I completely forgot about it." Santos also admitted to lying when he claimed that he owned 13 different properties, saying he now resides at his sister's place in Huntington, but is looking to purchase his own place. Again, these are personal matters. But when you go on the record and lie about them and get elected based on those lies, that's an issue. You know, I feel bad scrutinizing the guy's private life, but he's basically made himself so untrustworthy now. You're putting him in a real position of power, you know, representing a sizable district of Long Island. It's just, you have to open this up to scrutiny. You absolutely have to.
Yeah, and the people he represents don't now at all understand or know who they're talking to and who is representing them, because he's made himself out to be someone in the context of the race. And now, what will his priorities, how long will it take for people to catch up? How long will he be in office for people's understanding of who he is to catch up? And what will the impact of that be?
There's also suspicion that he has criminal charges against him in Brazil, which he denies. I campaigned talking about the people's concerns, not my resume. I intend to deliver on the promises I made during the campaign, fighting crime, fighting to lower inflation, improving education. The people elected me to fight for them. No, people elected somebody else to fight for them. Because it wasn't you. You made up this persona that doesn't actually exist. So I don't know how you can say that you're the one they elected. They don't know who you are. And all we're trying to do is get to know you a little better. That's it. You know? And it's so hard. You've made it so very, very hard. Santos said the $11 million in assets reported in his financial disclosure report filed in September are tied to his Devoida consulting firm. All of my finances come from the firm. The assets are the contracts with the firm, he told the Post. His campaign committee, Devoida Santos for Congress, also reported that he personally loaned his campaign more than $600,000. Senior House Republicans were apparently aware of the inaccuracies and embellishments in the member-elect's resume, and the topic became a running joke, multiple insiders close to House GOP leadership said. As far as questions about George in general, that was always something that was brought up whenever we talked about this race, said one senior GOP leadership aide. It was a running joke at a certain point. This is the second time he's run, and these issues we assume to be worked out by the voters. Well, they should be worked out by the voters now that we have the facts. And he said one final thing. Happy holidays to all. I just don't think he's taking it seriously. Just don't really believe it. And now,
does he even believe in holidays?
I don't know. We don't know that.
I mean, that could be a lie, too.
This just happened today. Two top Long Island Republicans called on the House Ethics Committee to investigate incoming Representative George Santos a day after the embattled politician conceded in a series of interviews that he had lied about his educational background and work experience. And again, okay, yeah, that may amount to an admission of lying, but don't think he actually said that he lied. Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman. Okay, I'm surprised. This guy is showing some integrity. And incoming Representative Nick LaLota. Hey, that's our representative. That's the guy who replaced Zeldin. All right, then. Maybe there's hope for LaLota yet. We'll see. They each told Newsday that congressional investigators should look into Santos's record, which has come into question after a New York Times investigation found a number of holes in the biography he touted on the campaign trail. Blakeman said, I think he's entitled to a hearing with the House Ethics Committee and that they should do a thorough investigation to see if he violated any laws or any ethics rules. I think that we have to let the process unfold, which I think will happen fairly swiftly. Now, LaLota basically said he believes a full investigation by the House Ethics Committee and, if necessary, law enforcement is required. New Yorkers deserve the truth, and House Republicans deserve an opportunity to govern without this distraction. Couldn't agree more. You guys got to do the right thing. And if that means holding a special election, which you'll probably win, then do that. But this, this just makes Republicans look really bad and turns the whole political landscape into a big joke. Yeah.
I could just hear the discussion, you know. So we are concerned that you are part jerk, and we just want to know what the ratio is here, what percentage jerk you are.
Yeah, it's true. It's just that this whole atmosphere where you can lie now, you can make something
up. You can't,
no. No, you can lie, and all you have to do is say, well, that's my version of the facts.
Don't normalize. No, you are the problem saying that. That is not true. You cannot lie, and you won't get away with it. Not even on this show. I just called you out.
You're canceled. Reading Twitter last night, and I read it like a newspaper. No, it's true. It's a much more traditional way.
Like page to page?
Page to page, yeah. I've got a lot to go. But the latest thing now is that people who got vaccinated are dying now from COVID. More than people who are unvaccinated. Yeah. And if you look at all the comments on Twitter, almost 100% are saying, we were right all along, all these idiots that got vaccinated. And basically, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people spouting this nonsense and quoting newspaper headlines out of context and just basically turning a lot of people onto their side because they seem to be telling the truth when they're not telling the truth. I saw one guy who was a doctor, you know, Dr. So-and-so. Basically saying, yes, we were right about this the whole time, everything, and basically seeming very official. And, you know, that got me. Wow, a doctor actually saying this. Until I looked up his resume, he's got a doctorate in artificial intelligence. That's his doctorate. Nothing to do with human medicine or diseases or anything like that. But he puts the doctor in front of his name to make it seem like he knows what he's talking about when all he's doing is spouting his opinion, much like I'm doing. You know, I am not an epidemiologist, or did I even get that word right? I don't know. What I can do is interpret what I read and weigh things, and I've reached what I believe to be my conclusion. you know, take my advice if you wish, but definitely take the advice of people who know what they're talking about, who are in the field, scientists, doctors, those kind of people. If you don't trust them, it's you're fooling yourself. You know, you really are fooling yourself. Now, as to this this ridiculous story going around, as far as more people who are have been vaccinated and now dying from COVID, it actually makes a degree of sense because it has to do with mathematics. The vast majority of people have gotten vaccinated right now. And by that, I mean they've gotten at least one jab. Keep in mind, we're up to, what are we up to now? Three? Four?
Four.
Four.
There's a bivalent or multivalent vaccine.
So if...
I think that's the right word.
Well, if you got one, it's probably not as effective as it was the day or the week after you got it the first time. And the vast majority of people have not gotten all four, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's quite likely, quite possible that since the majority of people, the vast majority of people in this country have been vaccinated, that if anyone dies of anything, they're likely to be somebody who got vaccinated. It's not really the same thing as saying that getting vaccinated is the cause of you dying. No, the vast majority of people have been vaccinated. So, yeah, that stands to reason, especially if they weren't being kept updated on their shots. You know, they don't say it that way, though, because if you say it that way, it doesn't support their crazy conclusions that somehow it's the vaccine that's the problem.
Well, also, so much of life has not been about, like, quote, lockdowns and all the other aspects of this that people were critiquing and making up their minds about. Here now, people are able to get on with their lives and so forth, and I find that a lot of this seems to be coinciding with some of the tumult of stuff going on in China and their population who is totally, like, suffering, and that news is hitting, and I think a lot of the panic that is being that is surfacing is really meant to ride off of that story, which is very, you know, dire and important news. So long story long, we've not come out of this. There are a lot of people who are still at the effect of this, and we have to think of them. We have to be considerate.
Unfortunately, that outro music tells us that we are out of time just when we were getting going. Yes, don't read what you, don't believe what you read online. Don't believe what you read on Twitter. Look into the science. Talk to people who have devoted their lives to this kind of thing. You know, the Einsteins of the world. Trust them. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned for Finn coming up on WUSB.
Have a great night.